How's it going, everybody? Dieter Kurtenbach here, joined by Mark Medina. This is the Warriors HQ podcast. Game 5 in the books. What a contest. A lot to talk about after this one. We are going to head to Houston, Texas for Game 6 in a couple of hours here, but we wanted to put all of our thoughts onto tape before we get on that airplane. Warriors win 104-99. First, I got to tell you about the Clay deal. You know about the Clay deal if you listen to the show. 11 cents a day for the next 11 months. Everything at the Bay Area News Group, news, sports, all of Mark's great stuff, all of my stuff, NFL, NHL, Sharks advance to the Western Conference Finals in hockey. You got to be reading our Sharks coverage. It's exceptional. No one does it better than the San Jose Mercury News when it comes to the San Jose Sharks. No one does it better in the fourth quarter, Mark, than Draymond Green. Now, he didn't play the entire fourth quarter because he fouled out of this game, but Kevin Durant goes down with an injury at the end of the third quarter, a non-contact calf strain. It's an injury he's had before. Last year, it kept him out for 3 games in the middle of the season. Year before that, he had a left calf strain, kept him out of 2 playoff games against the Portland Trailblazers. So he knows how to deal with this stuff. It is not an Achilles injury, which of course would be the first thing you fear when you see Kevin Durant go down like that. But then the Warriors, facing death of their dynasty, because they're not coming back and winning back-to-back games without Kevin Durant in Houston and then a Game 7. Looking death in the face, they come out and put on an inspired performance down the stretch, hold on, and it was all sparked by Draymond Green. But first, let's talk about this Durant injury. What do we know, and what do we expect?
Yeah, so the Warriors say it's a right calf strain. He's getting an MRI. Today is Wednesday, so he's going to get it on Thursday. It's not clear if he's going to travel to Houston. Klay Thompson was saying he hopes, but that doesn't mean anything. And really what it comes down to, it's what grade is it? Is it grade 1, grade 2, grade 3? The kind of the severity is across the board. If it's a grade 1, I mean, he could be back within a matter of days. If it's grade 3, we're talking weeks, if not more.
Yeah.
So that's the thing that's going to be the million-dollar question. And when you talk to the Warriors, seeing Kevin Durant first, you saw him limping pretty noticeably to the locker room. That's what he showed when he initially injured it. I know that the Warriors were concerned about the Achilles, and that's a serious injury, but Frank had no reason to think that way because Lakers plug covering Kobe's Achilles. When you have an Achilles injury, you fall to the ground.
Yeah.
It feels like someone kicks you. Kobe was able to walk on his own and put weight on it after hitting 2 free throws, which is like in Lakers lore. But most guys can't even walk.
Right.
So this whole idea that, oh my gosh, Kevin may have torn Achilles, like hogwash.
It was one of those things where this is just something I've known. I actually had a science teacher who tore his Achilles doing like jujitsu, and he explained what it was like as we have the wonderful air conditioning here at Oracle Arena kicking in. You might not be able to hear us all that well, but he says it's like a shotgun going off when your Achilles ruptures. And clearly, you don't just casually kind of walk off the court. So calf strain makes sense given what we saw, but we don't know the severity. That's what the MRI will tell us. We can say with near impunity, he's not playing in Game 6 on Friday. We don't even know if he's traveling, so that should tell you pretty much. The fact that he doesn't play in the fourth quarter can tell you a lot about what's going to happen Friday. Beyond that, who the hell knows? If the Warriors win on Friday, which that's a challenge enough, then we'll find out if they have where their Game 1 is. It could be Sunday here at Oracle Arena. It could be Tuesday at Oracle Arena. But they're going to have one more game at Oracle Arena at least. And they're not going to have Kevin Durant going for the game in Houston. Jeez, I got to get this out. For the game in Houston on Friday, I think we can feel comfortable in saying that. Where does that leave these Warriors?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, they laid the template out on how to win, right, without Kevin Durant. But is that realistic to replicate on a long-term basis? I'm feeling uneasy about that. I mean, the Warriors – it was kind of a perfect storm where it's late in the third quarter, so it's really about just gutting out a final quarter. You know, they had been squandering their 20-point lead, but they had still been up at that point. And there's kind of that adrenaline rush and kind of, man, when the Warriors feel challenged, this is the ultimate one. But the reality is the Houston Rockets are a really good team, and to have to replicate that in a Game 6 on the road, the fact that these guys, you know, Durant aside, Andre Iguodala and Draymond Green, Klay Thompson, Steph Curry are logging pretty heavy minutes. You know, Andre was able to get a breather a little bit because Kevon Looney came up really big. You know, if he's going to put his free agency resume reel out here, he's got to put this footage.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know if they can really sustain this long term. It's encouraging that they gutted this out and gave themselves some wiggle room, but this is going to be tough.
They did find a spirit, and being at home was huge. Draymond Green, what they did defensively when Kevin Durant went out was inspired. And there's a little bit of a chicken and an egg scenario there because James Harden looked absolutely gassed. Chris Paul might have had his retirement ceremony here tonight. He was ghastly in this contest. But the Warriors played inspired defense with Kevon Looney and Draymond Green really holding down the fort. Klay Thompson doing some exceptional stuff. And Steph kind of getting back to that Tasmanian devil style defense that he can play. But it's important to note the Warriors went back to classic Warriors, what we first learned about these Warriors in 2015-2016, the original Steve Kerr offense, which is predicated on the high pick and roll. That is a defense that the Houston Rockets are built to stop. The Houston Rockets' entire system is about controlling pace on offense and playing the isolation game, and that helps their defense. And on defense, they play physical switching defense. And this is the exact formula that helped the Cleveland Cavaliers get back from a 3-1 deficit against the Warriors in the 2016 NBA Finals. I know we're not supposed to talk about that around here, but it happened. And how it happened was Ty Lue was in the news today. That was kind of funny. But Ty Lue took a while to figure out in that series that Stephen Curry, with his knee injury, could not go to his left. And they finally figured out, hey, here's how you stop him. You switch everything. You play super physical off the ball. They had nothing to lose, obviously, being down 3-1. And that defense completely stymied the Warriors, as well as Harrison Barnes clanking a bunch of threes down the stretch. That's the same offense the Warriors have no choice but to go to now. That is a defense that they're going to be going up against in the Rockets that's built off of that Cavs team's style and has been perfected over the last 2 years, I would argue. And it's going to be a fascinating chess game because we've seen the Rockets, I would argue, win that chess game in every quarter but the fourth tonight. The Warriors have not been able to do anything with the pick and roll, the kind of motion offense that they are so well known for. And that's why Klay Thompson was having such a crappy series. The Rockets are going to molest these guys off the ball. It's to the point where they're so physical off the ball, it's impossible to call a foul on every play, even though one's happening. It's the Seattle Seahawks level of normalizing pass interference. That's what they're doing off the ball. Steph Curry has to deal with it. Klay Thompson has to deal with it. And so what would happen is the Warriors would just say, we can't get anything going. These guys are holding and grabbing us, and they're switching everything. We cannot get any verve, any rhythm, any movement. And the only time that we seem to get into our identity is when we're in transition. And those opportunities are extremely rare because of the way the Rockets play offense. So just give the ball to Kevin, because Kevin can overcome all of this. And this is the reason they got Kevin, because that high pick and roll proved susceptible to the new way that everyone was going to play basketball, the way that the Warriors more or less created 2 years before, because not only did they go to the high pick and roll, which wasn't necessarily unique, but certainly I would argue perfected by that early Warriors team, they also went to the super switching defense, which is really not something that many teams in the NBA prior to the Warriors had done at an exceptionally high level, because they didn't have a guy like Draymond Green who could switch at the five. This is the way the new NBA is played. This is the way the Houston Rockets have built their team to stop that kind of a team. And Kevin Durant was the trump card, the one guy that they couldn't account for on a nightly basis. And now the Warriors do not have him on the road, where the Rockets are going to be allowed to be a lot more physical than they were tonight. And they were straight up pushing dudes tonight. So pessimistically, I think it's fair to be extremely pessimistic. I also think that the Warriors found a little bit of extra something in the truest moment of desperation, the one that they never wanted to have, the one that they have. It kind of sparked something much in the way last year down double digits game 7. And it is really fun to watch kind of the Warriors throw back, you know, turn back the clock. And they felt it at Oracle, and that came together in a really wonderful way. I have a hard time seeing that happen on the road, and then we'll have to see where we're at on Sunday if they do play in a Game 7. But it's really fascinating. If the Warriors can somehow win Game 6 with the style that they're going to play, and the style that the Rockets are certainly – the Rockets are ready. This is the moment they've been waiting for their entire basketball careers. If the Warriors still win that game, that's just going to be such an incredible body blow. I mean, I don't know how the Rockets recover from that after what happened last year, because the Rockets should absolutely 100% win. Whatever the line is, I'm certain the Rockets will be favored for Game 6. That line's going to jump up 3-4 points in Las Vegas because – Durant has been such a factor in this series, and the Warriors don't have him, so they don't have the bailout, which brings us now to the bigger concern. Not obviously, not having Kevin Durant is a huge issue, but the Warriors' bench was really bad going into this game, and now it's all on them again. I think we can presume that you're going to see more Kevon Looney, might even start in Game 6. He was absolutely fantastic in Game 5, his first really good game of the series, in my opinion. Jonas Jerebko comes out at the beginning of the fourth. What do you have any expectation? Do you get any vibe on who's going to have to carry a little bit more of the load? No one's going to replace Kevin Durant, but who do you think gets the tap on the shoulder? Because they're going to need another body.
Yeah, well, in fairness to Steve Kerr, he said after the game that this is what he and the coaching staff are going to be talking about on the flight over, of brainstorming rotations. But if I'm just using logic of what Steve Kerr has used, you know, in this series where it's all about playing your best guys, Kevon Looney is going to be starting at center. Mm-hmm. And then I would think that you have Draymond Green at the four, Andre Iguodala at the three, Klay Thompson, Steph Curry in the backcourt. And that just doesn't leave anything to chance. I think there will be also times where Steve Kerr is staggering his rotation. So he puts maybe Iguodala with the second unit, Kevon Looney with the second unit, you know, along with some kind of combination with Klay and or Steph. Right. Like, I don't think they'll be together just for preservation purposes. But, yeah, I would be very surprised if Kevon doesn't start, just because he's the most dependable guy. And the whole idea of, well, you want to have someone to come off the bench to keep the rotation, that's all out the window. This isn't the regular season. Yeah. But everyone else, their roles are going to be elevated even more. Like, somehow, some way, Sean Livingston's going to have to be able to play more minutes, even though his hip is maybe not a thing to keep him out of Game 5, but it's a thing to monitor. And then Alphonso McKinney, he's gonna show what he's made of with an elevated role. Other than that, I think you'll see, you know, maybe some minutes for Jerebko and Quinn Cook, but more of the idea of putting them in very specific situations where it's just about, hey, you're eating a few seconds or eating a few minutes. Still don't think this is enough for Jordan Bell or Jacob Evans to get some time.
That Jacob Evans thing, we talked about it on the last pod. Oh boy. I mean, we don't need to get into it. We're piling on at this point, but yeah, Quinn Cook, maybe he sees a little bit more, but I think we can write off Jordan Bell and we can write off Jacob Evans. If there was ever a time though for Jacob Evans to come through, Jacob Evans can wash away a terrible season of basketball with one Nick Young style game. I doubt it's going to happen. I don't think that the Warriors are going to trust a guy like Evans in Game 6. But we'll find out. It could get real weird real fast.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you never say never. I could only see Jacob Evans getting minutes where it's like the final 15 seconds of some defensive play. You know, the other thing, which I was kind of wondering aloud earlier in the day of, you know, for this series being something where, you know, Klay and most notably Steph has struggle with foul trouble, like maybe Steve decides to kind of allocate his resources and say, hey, if there's fouls to give, let's just throw these non-consequential guys in there to collect fouls. But I don't think they're trying to defend fouling, but if you were to choose, who do we want foul trouble, one or the other? You'd obviously have some of those guys who want to be playing anyway.
Mark, you're clearly forgetting the end of quarter number three in Game 4 when Steve Kerr threw in Jordan Bell for that express purpose of fouling James Harden, and it ended up with Andre Iguodala having to foul James Harden and Jordan Bell both preventing the Warriors from scoring a point on one end and giving up points on the other end. So, listen, we're going to find out how good of a coach Steve Kerr is, because they're up against it. I know that the Warriors should never be viewed as an underdog. They still have a two-time MVP on their team. They still have a guy who's going to get a max contract on their team in Klay Thompson. But this team was already extremely vulnerable coming into this game. Losing Kevin Durant, I mean, I don't know what's beyond vulnerable. That's been their best player the entire postseason, and the one thing that they could count on to beat the Rockets on a nightly basis, and now they don't have it. So they're going to have to summon something deep, as I said before, and that lies on Kerr, too. He can get real weird with the rotations. I think that they need to deeply consider a hack a Capella strategy at some point, which that might be a good opportunity for Jordan Bell and Jacob Evans or even Andrew Bogut to get in there and just give us five, big man, and lay it on Clint Capella and slow that game down. But the Warriors obviously then want to get out into transition. They want to do it. But they got to throw the kitchen sink at this bad boy. And with not a lot of turnaround time, that makes things a little tricky, but luckily it's the Rockets. They've played them like 22 times over the last couple of years. They're pretty familiar. It's not as if the Rockets have an expansive playbook either. They're pretty familiar with this team, but it was an inspired performance in the fourth quarter tonight. What did you see about what they did? Was it just energy, or did you see anything tactically that really stood out to you? Because I'll tell you the one thing that really stood out to me, not even so much for the Warriors, but the fact that James Harden's legs looked completely shot in the fourth quarter. He had one field goal in the final 8:30, and that was more or less a bucket that the Warriors gave him in the final seconds because they were up and they just wanted to get the ball back so they can get to the free throw line. Now, they almost botched it from there, but, you know, that's a different story. Harden he faded absolutely in the fourth quarter of Game 4. He faded in the fourth quarter of Game 5. His legs look shot, and he is still an exceptional player. He had 31 points tonight, but what was he? 10 of 16 from the field. That's not bad, but 16 shots, that doesn't seem right. Home court whistle is going to be a thing. He's probably going to need to bounce back in some way, but man, the Warriors have to like where Harden is at, and if they can somehow find a way, maybe you go right into the fire. I know that they've been trying to avoid him, but maybe you go right into the fire and you say, James Harden, you're going to have to beat us straight up, which is kind of already the plan for the Rockets, but you lean into it a little bit more and you say, okay, if you got it, show it. And listen, we've seen it before. He can shoot a team out of a game in a big game. He shot the Rockets as much as they went 0 for 27 for 3. Missed 27 straight threes in Game 7 of last year's Western Conference Finals. James Harden was a big part of that, and he was non grata in that game to the point where I remember standing in the tunnel at Toyota Center, and people were just going in on Rockets fans, going in on them as if they had sent out a tweet at 1:37 in the morning, and about how he doesn't have it, he doesn't have the clutch gene, he always fades in the big moments. This is the rap that even his own fans throw on him. Maybe the Warriors lean into it a little bit and just say, listen, if we lose to James Harden and he has a monster game, fair play. But I want to see what you got. I want to see you do it for four straight quarters, because if he starts missing, then the Warriors have opportunities. It's probably going to be a pretty low-scoring game, because until the first three quarters of this game in Game 5, they had not controlled the pace at all. I can't imagine that the Rockets don't regain control of that area in Game 6. What have you seen from Harden? What's your viewpoint on Harden here going into what's got to be the biggest game of his career?
Well, I think the regression is starting to hit, but I don't know if it's gotten to the point where you're looking at the last 2 years where he's completely burned out. So I know I don't think really the focus is on hoping that Harden burns out, to be honest. I think it's more on how the rest of the guys play. So kind of answering your question about what changed in the fourth, I think before and after Kevin's injury, like Clay started playing the way he should, where he was being a lot more aggressive and he was patient with the shot. Draymond before and after was playing unbelievable. Like, I think to open the game, he was involved with the first three plays where he was setting up teammates, and his whole vow of, you know, setting the tone defensively, he backed up those words. And then, you know, after Durant's injury, it sounded like there was a good combination of Draymond, Steph, and Andre, and even DeMarcus Cousins trying to calm everyone down, you know, from the bench and then on the court, you know, sans Cousins. And at that point, Steph seemed to be more aggressive. Like, he had 12 of his 25 points in the fourth. And then Kevon Looney did a lot of good things that he showed in his first rotation, where he had set a shoot around. Hey, he needs to improve on doing all those little things that makes the Warriors and yourself, you know, love what he brings. And when you look at this series alone, he was really a non-factor. Sometimes it was struggling with fouls, sometimes just not having a presence. And here, he did all those little things at the right time, especially, you know, that final play where Clay was getting double teamed and it looked like he was going to turn the ball over, and Kevon was able to retrieve and set him up for a layup. And, you know, afterwards, he was admitting that this is like the most important game he's ever had as a Warrior. So, you know, when summer hits, this is the first performance, I think, that his agent should be showing different teams.
I still maintain that the Houston Rockets, in their cheap offseason, made a drastic mistake by not just stealing Kevon Looney away just so the Warriors didn't have him. Even if they just sat his butt at the end of the bench, it would have been money well spent for the Golden State Warriors not to have him. And he was exceptional in this game. Offensive rebounds really changed the tone of this game, and that's been a theme for this entire series, right? Where offensive rebounds have just been huge, and the Warriors, I thought, won that battle in Game 5. I do want to... I want to talk about Draymond real fast, because it cannot be understated his impact on this game. And he had a nice stat line, don't get me wrong, but it felt bigger than his numbers. He was just an absolute war daddy tonight. And this guy in big games is almost next to none in the NBA. We can talk about what, you know, he's the heartbeat of the team and he brings the energy and all these things. That's absolutely true. It goes beyond that. In games where sphincters get tight and the pressure is on, this guy rises to those are the situations where he finds his best performances. And it's just so jarring, the difference between him and so many people on the court, even on his own team, and guys who have been through the wars before. Watching him rise to the occasion while everyone else just doesn't feel like they're capable of handling that moment. They say that pressure makes diamonds. Draymond Green is absolutely a diamond. And I've maintained for a long time that Kevin's most likely leaving after this season. And there's 100 reasons. We can go. We'll talk about that certainly more once the season starts winding down. And we kind of have a clearer landscape of what happened with this Warriors team. But, you know, there have been questions about what happens with Draymond after that point, because certainly he has taken a beating over the last couple of years. There are serious questions on how he will, what his longevity is going to be like in the NBA with all of these injuries that he carries around. I call them a crash test dummy in my column going out of Game 4 after a long shift, by the way, not a pristine new crash test dummy. People have said, oh, they'll trade him. They're not going to give him the max, all this stuff. And I have said, and Steve Kerr and I have kind of gotten into this before, you get rid of Draymond, this all goes away. It's not that Steph is an incredible and a good leader and all this stuff, and it's not that you don't need Klay Thompson, but Draymond Green has this ineffable quality that shows up in the biggest moments. And it did that again tonight, and you know he's going to come right for Game 6. You absolutely know it. You can set your watch to it, and he's going to be there for Game 7. And I think it's a proper time to appreciate Draymond Green, because I don't think he necessarily willed his team to victory tonight, but if there was a cart that needed to be pulled, he was the main guy pulling that cart tonight. And the moment where he made the three-pointer, kind of a scramble play, and it's like, oh no, Draymond shooting a three-pointer, and it's a very big moment in the game. And he makes it, and he comes down the other way, and I mean, he is losing his mind, screaming and just yelling at the top of his lungs, and Oracle is rocking in a way that I don't think we've heard it rock in the last couple of years, if I'm being totally honest. That was just a really cool moment, and that's where I feel like they tapped into some spirits there. Even they are not a better team without Kevin Durant. That is a stupid, preposterous statement. But without Kevin Durant tonight, they had to tap back into something that had kind of gone dormant, and they had to become a better version of themselves in that moment. And it's the guy like Draymond Green who can bring you through in moments like that. And I just think we should appreciate sort of the ineffable qualities, the stuff that we can't see on the box score in terms of energy. If Andre Iguodala brings the smarts and the collectiveness and all of those things that Steve Kerr rightfully lauds him for, Draymond Green brings sort of the exact opposite. He's obviously a very smart player with an incredible basketball IQ, but he brings all of that energy. So Draymond's going to be huge in Game 6. Who are you looking for in Game 6 to really shine? I know it has to be Steph. The two-time MVP has to show up, but who are you really focusing in on and saying, okay, it's your time. You got to come up with him.
Honestly, it's all the above. Like, it's fitting that, before Kevin Durant, they were all about strength and numbers. Like, it has to be that embodiment. And the problem is the 2015-16 Warriors and the 2014-15 Warriors, this core group of players, they were younger then. So that's number one. Number two, they had a much better bench. Right. And Andrew Bogut was a much different player. If they advance against the Rockets and they play either Denver or Portland, I mean, I could see Andrew getting some time because matchups are better, but I don't see him serving a role in Houston because he just doesn't match up well. So there's no one particular player that I think is like, hey, this guy's got to get it going. They all have to get it going. They don't really have any margin for error. And the only silver lining, and I wouldn't even say that because that's probably strong, but because of how valuable Kevin is and because of how wired this team is where it seems like they need to be challenged, maybe this forces them to dig themselves even more. And you know what? Like, out of respect for the Rockets, I don't think that there was a game this series where the Warriors weren't quote-unquote bringing it. I mean, you can microanalyze plays or, you know, look at the rebounds and they're paying attention, but I think a lot of it was execution and them going through the regular season apathy, right?
Yeah.
But there is a way of, you know, when things in life or in sports seem catastrophic, like all of a sudden these things come up that you wouldn't do in normal circumstances. And I think the thing that you mentioned about Draymond, it's a very good point. And I would add to it, like, obviously everyone knows that Steph Curry is the heart and soul of the team and he's the best player. And even when you account for the shooting, like, his value also goes to the gravity and the floor spacing and the joyful atmosphere. But beyond the fact that, you know, if the ball's moving and people are playing with joy, like, Draymond has the most transferable qualities that can impact everyone else because no one can defend like Draymond. Only Draymond can do that. But the way he goes about defending and leading, that causes guys to have a different mentality and a different intensity. Where when you're looking at Steph, like, no one can shoot like him. Maybe Klay, obviously. Yeah, you can get some open shots, but no one can really replicate that same kind of presence. Where with Draymond, you might not be able to stop people like him, but you're going to bring that, you know, mentality that he has because he's the one setting the tone.
The Draymond thing is going to be really interesting too in Game 6, because I think the whistle is going to be absolutely huge. And I think it was big in this game too. I'm not, you know, alleging any fix, but the home court whistle has been...
You need to clarify to what's his face.
No, he tweeted through it. Whatever he needed. My Rorschach test has shown people's true colors, and God bless him. As we were saying after Game 4, you know, the city of Houston, the Rockets fan base is filled with a rage that honestly I've never seen before. It's a very focused, intense rage. They are frothing at the mouth trying to beat these Warriors, and probably poorly worded joke about Adam Silver not being a David Stern and handling his business. It didn't go well. Let's put it that way. Well, it didn't. I didn't actually mind all that much. At a certain point, it was just like, well, these people seem to misconstrued this. And I guess I can sort of see how that happened. And I guess just let them go. And boy, did they find some deep, dark crannies that they wanted to bring into the light. And that's just them. I mean, the Rockets play-by-play guy. It's really funny when a team employee tells me what I should and should not be doing in terms of covering the Warriors. We can all agree that I'm not exactly the most independent of journalists, but ultimately, like, I go to Cabo or cover the Sharks if the Warriors lose this in seven. I got it good anyway, baby. I am not the most impartial. I'm certainly no Mark Medina. I would like the Warriors to win only because I so despise the Houston Rockets, and I guess they just needed to further that that loathing.
Yeah, and I really should have stayed above the fray, but the one irritating thing that, you know, it can be a pet peeve of mine is when people speak in absolutes about groups of people, because it's usually inaccurate and an overgeneralization. So when he's going after this whole Bay Area media and, like, we're smug, it's just dumb because, one, I think most, all of us are pretty fair with the coverage and ask tough questions. And obviously we praise them because they've been winning three titles in the last 4 years. But, you know, me personally, like, I covered the Lakers. I could not care less if they won. Right. I covered them during their worst stretch in franchise history. I still had a blast covering them, had a blast covering the Warriors. And I'm not even from the Bay Area. I'm from Pennsylvania. So if you want to, like, divide this into the whole, like, red state, blue state BS, like, I'm from, you know.
It's a red state now.
Yeah, I'm from what they call a red state. So, like, it doesn't fit that dumb narrative at all.
I mean, I'm stunned. I said it was a Rorschach test. And so my mistake in all of this was to make a joke about rigging a series. What I should have done was leaked a bunch of confidential information at the beginning of the series and not joked about it, just straight up alleged that the series was being rigged. And then that way I would have been Daryl Morey. I mean, it's just, it was totally laughable. And, I hope that they bring that same energy to Game 6. I'm wondering, as someone who is persona non grata in Cleveland, Australia, the Clippers had a problem with me in the last series. I'm really building up a hell of a firebrand here. I wish more of y'all were reading it. Where's my check? Real fast before we get out of here, the Draymond thing is going to be huge because I think the home court whistle is going to be huge. Offensive fouls have been sort of a defining factor in the series outside of offensive rebounds, in the fact that James Harden does not get called for offensive fouls at home, and he does get called for offensive fouls here on the road. And this is, I don't think the fix is in. I'm just merely stating that home court whistle is a real thing. The crowd will sort of sway 50-50 calls towards the home team. And this is, I think, a bigger concern going into Game 7 if it happens, because if the Warriors cannot get through the Rockets in Game 6, and the Rockets, I think, are going to bring their A-game, I think the Warriors are going to bring their A-game, and you probably favor the Rockets in that situation, knowing that James Harden's going to go away with every push-off, as he has in Games 3 and 4. Now you go into a Game 7, and I don't think home court whistle really exists in a Game 7, because we've seen a Game 7 both last year and in 2016 with the Warriors. And what struck me particularly in the 2016 NBA Finals, which I've been thinking about a lot lately, apparently, is how much of a rock fight that game was. Because the referees basically said, you guys figure it out. We are certainly not, the narrative of this game will not be the referees called a bunch of fouls. We will let you fight it out. And it will always favor the more physical team. And now the Warriors are going to a straight finesse game without Kevin Durant. And it will be really interesting to see how that plays out, because maybe that's the changeup that they need. Maybe we're underestimating that ability, and they should have been kind of running this high pick and roll the entire time. And the Rockets are not as good at defending it as maybe I thought that they would be. But, yeah, the Warriors are in a pickle. I know that there are, you know, reasons to be optimistic. They only have to win one or two. They're going to get another home game, all this stuff. But, boy, it's going to be absolutely engrossing Game 6. And should we get to a Game 7, you can call your mom after the game on Mother's Day, because you're going to need to have your calendar cleared until that game is over. I am hyper excited for it. I am hyper excited for the San Jose Sharks, who won tonight and are heading to play the St. Louis Blues in the Western Conference Finals. I think that the best way to show your excitement for this great moment in Bay Area sports is to get the Clay Deal. That's 11 cents a day for the next 11 months. That means you're going to get all of the coverage, and boy, is there going to be a ton of coverage, too much coverage, perhaps. And you should follow Mark Medina on Twitter. That's MarkG_Medina. You should follow me on Twitter. You should follow all of the great Bay Area News Group sports writers on Twitter. And you got to get your calendar cleared for Friday. Whatever plans you had, you got to get them cleared, because we got a basketball game to get to in Houston, Texas. We are so excited to cover it for you. We are so excited to talk to you after that game. Thanks for listening, everybody. We will talk soon.